the Simply Focus with Elfie Czerny and Dominic Gilda for Life and Joy and Ease.
Welcome back to the Simply Focus podcast, The Good Life Approach, your podcast for life in joy and ease. This is episode 24 and my name is Elfie Czerny.
And I'm Dominic Gilda. Hi there. Today we're in Kingston, Ontario. Just yesterday we left Toronto and drove for 2.5 hours to Kingston. And now we're here on a beautiful campground with a swimming pool. And after the podcast, Bibi and I will go swimming.
In the next few days, we will head on to Montreal, Quebec City, and the direction of Halifax again. So we are very excited to finish our Trans-Canada tour in the next few weeks. And we are very excited to be here with Elliot Conney today. Hi, Elliot. It's a pleasure to have you
here. Hello. Thank you. It's a pleasure for me as well.
You're in Texas, Fort Worth right now?
I'm in Keller, Texas, which is a suburb of Fort Worth right now, yes.
Awesome. And great to have you on Zoom today.
And we met you in January, and it was such a lovely meeting that we had with you. Still remember Texas brisket.
And actually, Elliot, you saved our evening by ordering ice cream for Bibi when she dropped off the chair. So we are still very grateful for that refocus exercise. You invited her.
And
no. It was just beautiful to see that.
No problem at all. Ice cream fixes all.
Yeah, and we still tell the story. We've told the story quite often in the last few months. Yeah. The best reaction ever to something that happened with Bibi. You're a solution-focused brief therapist, you're author, you're keynote speaker, you travel the world and spread the word. Solution Focus, you are, you could say, dean of the Solution Focus University and do so many things. You were just in South Africa and came back. So many things worldwide to spread the Solution Focus approach. And we're so happy to have you here and have you as someone who, well, goes out and really not only teaches but spreads the enthusiasm for it.
So I try.
You do. How does Yoda say, there is no try?
There is no try.
And I know you're a big Star Wars fan. So.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan, yes.
So, Elliot, what fascinates you with solution focus?
I think the thing that fascinates me most is when you talk about solution-focused brief therapy and what it is and how it works and all of that, it seems to make logical sense. To give an odd example, if you want to create most change or if you want to acquire something, right? Like the example I always use, if I go to a restaurant, and the server's job is to ascertain what it is the customer wants to eat. The server would never ask, what is it you don't want? Mm-hmm. Right? The server would never ask that. Mm-hmm. The server says, what would you like to eat? And then the customer sorts out what they want to eat and they say it. Mm-hmm. The server would never say, before I ask you what you'd like to eat, let me first do a diagnosis about why you're so hungry. And let me judge you or about how you let yourself get this hungry. Like, it doesn't even make sense in that context. Well, solution-focused brief therapy is just that put into the psychotherapy framework. And to me, it just makes a ton of sense. When I talk about it, when I hear other people talk about it, just kind of like, it's logical. It's completely, utterly sensical. But somehow, when you talk to other professionals about it, it somehow becomes nonsensical. And they have a hard time understanding what this is, even though in their lives, they can function quite well doing these things in like restaurants or, you know, a taxi cab driver would never say, where should I not take you? Taxi driver would say, where should I take you? So even though we all do this in our daily lives, it's somehow odd to talk amongst our profession about what exactly this is. That's the thing I find fascinating the most today.
And how do you do that? How do you speak to them then? How do you kind of make this visible?
What I've tried to do is, number one, be as determined as I think the field is confused. So I'm going to be as determined and as passionate, and I'm going to have a function with the most follow through as I possibly can. And then the other thing, I'm going to be as transparent as possible, and I'm going to share as much of my work as I can, real sessions, and I want people to see it so they can say, oh, that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. And that's great, because if you go to YouTube, for example, and look for good solution-focused conversations, it's difficult to find really good conversations. It's difficult to say, well, just go there, and then you'll see what it is. So it's really great that you spread this.
Right. That's actually what started me is one day I went on YouTube. I can't remember why, but I did a search for solution-focused therapy and I almost threw up. Like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I don't mean to criticize or say negative things about other people. I mean, I'm sure they're doing the best and whatever, but they were very, very incongruent examples of solution-focused therapy. And it triggered me. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to put more stuff out there. I mean, not that my work is the greatest or whatever, but this was not work that any of us would agree is congruent to what we do as solution-focused professionals. So it became important to me to share exactly what it is we do so people had a clear example. If you're interested in solution-focused therapy, you should be able to find exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it became important to me to put information out into the world that mm-hmm. could address that.
And you have this awesome video series where you shared your stories or things that inspired you, your learnings in a very authentic and transparent way, as you said. So how do the topics come up here for you, what you share every week, and how do you keep yourself inspired?
Oh my gosh, I stay inspired. You know, when I was a kid, I overheard somebody say something and it stuck with me to this day. What I heard them say was, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Mm. And I don't know how to not be inspired. So this past week, we published my 100th blog. So every week I make a new video and put it on. And people often ask me, like, how do you come up with new ideas? I have 1,000 ideas every time I do it. Mm. The biggest problem I have when I record my videos is, which idea do I feature in this particular thing? So I'm just a guy who's in a constant state of inspiration. So that's a hard one for me to answer. I don't know how to get inspired because I stay inspired.
That's beautiful.
And talking about inspiration, we were very inspired when we read the Solution Focused Marriage, a book you wrote. And
awesome.
Of course, we did all the exercises in there. And the one we love the most is telling the story, how we met and how we noticed that the other person was interested or showed us that she was interested. And we had one of the best evenings with this exercise.
Awesome. That makes me smile. I mean, I think sometimes we forget that life happens in moments. Like a moment in my life that I'll never forget, and we were just talking about it, is when Bibi fell off the chair and she started crying. We went and got her ice cream and she had this look of just like childlike exuberant peace on her face. She went from crying to just like lapping up this ice cream. Mm-hmm. And when you unpack those moments of joy, you have no choice but to re-experience that joy. Mm. And the greatest moment in most people's lives is the day they met their spouse. Mm. And we should always hold on to that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So we had really awesome car drives with that and spent hours on telling the story. And what we loved about retelling the story was that even the story changed and that we just knew where to tease each other in a lovingly way and how to co-create. Yeah, really, stories we love to hear. We invite people to co-create stories even about their past where they can see the joy, where they can see the success,
right,
where they can see what works. So when you work with couples, what have you figured out works well in a therapy session, but also works well for people in their lives to reconnect and stay connected?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I think what I have figured out is something transformative happens when you co-construct a memory. Because as you've said, when you tell the story, it changes. And that's because every single day, your perspective changes. So I haven't figured out anything really that, like, I wish I could say, you know, when couples do this, this happens. The only thing I know is when you reconstruct a memory, when you co-construct a memory, I should say, and when you co-construct a future, unbelievably transformative things happen. I don't really care what the problem is. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care how long I've been married or how long the problem, like, none of that stuff matters to me. What matters to me is the reconstruction of the past and then the co-construction of the future, because transformative things happen. In some cases, the transformative thing is to realize we're no longer right for each other and going a separate way. Like, I don't view it as my job to save the marriage. Mm-hmm. It's my job to help people live in a congruent way that's moving more towards their best hopes. And sometimes people say, oh my gosh, after going through this process, I realize I'm not who my partner wants and my partner's not who I want, and they go a different direction, but they do it as their best self and the children they may have benefit and so on. And then other times they realize, oh my gosh, I forgot who you were and I forgot to show you who I am, and it creates a connection. But to me, both are equally beautiful. Like, I love to see both.
So in your book, people can read many, many stories and also questions how to do that. Could you still share some examples how to co-construct future and the past in a different way?
Especially for listeners who might not be into solution-focused that much.
Right. So I'll use an example that I used in the book, because I used the example of my very best friend. I happened to be there when my very best friend met his wife, which he actually met his wife for the first time twice. And I don't think I included the very first meeting in the book, but the very first time he met his wife, we were young kids and we were standing in front of a grocery store getting donations for our baseball team. We were 12 years old and a cute girl walked past us And my best friend's name is Kyle. He noticed the cute girl and the cute girl noticed him. So they kind of met eyes and the cute girl went back to her mom. Her name is Jennifer. Jennifer went back to her mom and was like pestering her mom, comes back and puts money in Kyle's container. And you're too young to like, you know, can I have your phone number, anything like that. At that time, it was just a cute moment between, you know, two 12-year-old people. They met again when we were late in our high school years. So we're 17 now. And at that time, they started dating. Now, when you're around Kyle and Jennifer, when you ask them to tell that story, it doesn't really matter what mood they're in. You have to transport yourself in order to use the language associated with that story. We're all familiar with this feeling, like music does this. If you have a favorite song, it ports you to a different time in your existence and you re-experience those emotions. Television shows do this. Movies do this. Well, so do the descriptions of our past lives. So when we talk about those moments, you have to go back and re-experience the emotion in order to answer the questions we have in solution-focused conversation. And the same thing is true in the future. You have to jump into the future. If I ask you a question about something that hadn't happened yet, I mean, the two of you are married, so I could say to you, suppose you walked out of your RV tomorrow and you stepped into a land where Dominic and Elfie, for whatever reason, were happier than they've ever been before. What's the first thing you would notice? In order to answer that question, you have to jump into a future conversation. You have to get into a certain state of mind to do that. And that state of mind is presuppositional. That state of mind has emotion attached to it. That state of mind is optimistic. Like, that state of mind is very positive. And people experience a benefit when they answer questions like that.
Could you give us some more of these beautiful questions? I just see us sitting here and looking out in the land.
I mean, they're anything. Like, if you turn around, I see a beautiful thing right now on my screen. And what I see is over Elfie's left shoulder is a bunch of things stuck to a wall. I mean, we talked in December, January, whatever it was. Like, you guys are creating memories that are going to last the rest of your life. So if 50 years from now, one of those magnets is in a shoebox and you guys are scrummaging through the shoebox and you say, do you remember the day we put this magnet on the RV wall? It's going to put you in a certain mind frame and you're going to get into a time machine and you're going to re-experience exactly what you're feeling today. You happen to be in one of my favorite places on earth, which is Ontario, Canada. And you guys are going to say, like, do you remember the maple syrup we had when we were in Canada? Do you remember the wonderful people we met? I think we live in a world where, like, negativity goes viral, but that's actually not the amazing stuff. Like, the amazing stuff is the people you met on this journey and the fact that you were in Texas and you had brisket and BB had ice cream and you had maple syrup in Canada. That's the sweetness. And I think if you can have conversations, whether in therapy or not, that encapsulates the beauty of the world, your life is going to be transformed. And I don't think anybody is immune to it.
Yeah, I love that, particularly as we find each other often very much inspired by your book to talk with other people about how they met each other and then just asking here and there a little solution-focused question. And you right. just can see how that engages both in a different kind of conversation. Often it's with solution-focused people, they are used to conversations like that. And still you can see the sparkle and like the joy of telling this story. And often it's with people who right. never heard about solution focus and they all of a sudden say, wow, interesting. We haven't talked about that for years, right?
And absolutely. I hear that kind of thing all the time where people say, like, I haven't told this story in years. And then also they're aware, like, even when I told the story, I haven't told it with emotion connected to it. Because in a normal conversation, if someone says, how did you meet? We typically respond with a where. So like, how did you meet? In college or at work. But if you are really, really interested in the moment where your eyes met one another, and even more in depth, like if you're really interested in that moment where you realize, oh my gosh, I'd like to spend more of my time with this person or that person, it's a whole nother ballgame. We're just in a whole nother space at that point.
It reminds me of one car drive we had in Switzerland for about 2.5 hours, where I said, oh, Elfie, you're such a cool woman. And Elfie said, oh, so what am I doing that shows you that I'm a cool woman, and what difference does that make for you? Tell me 25 things.
And he did that. And that was really, I think, the biggest confession.
And that's life. Like, that's how we live our life. If you look at Elfie and you say, like, you look beautiful today, I think she deserves to know what she did to make you feel that way. Mm-hmm. Or Elfie, if you look at Dominic and you say, you look handsome today, I think he deserves to know what he did that would cause you to view him as handsome on that day. Mm. I don't think we naturally talk like that. But the interesting thing is, if Dominic were to say the opposite to Elfie, or if Elfie, if you were to say the opposite to Dominic, we would ask. If Elfie were to say to Dominic, you don't look very good today, you'd say, how come? What's wrong? But I think we have to train ourselves that when you say someone is beautiful or smart or wonderful or handsome, we should say, how come? What's right?
Mm-hmm. And usually that's not a question that is very popular in everyday life. So how do you get people who are not into solution focus into such a conversation? Because these questions could sound quite odd.
Yes. You know, it's interesting because I don't mind sounding quite odd. So if someone comes into my office, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I know it's crazy. I'm totally in love with being in love. And I'm totally in love with the idea of love. So I just don't know how to talk to people these days without invoking that. I don't even know how to do it.
That's great not to know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. So when people come into my office and they're angry and they're hurt and they're distant, you know, like I said, I'm not trying to save the relationship because I don't think that's my job or role. But what I do think very strongly is if I can just be in love with the environment, if I can just be in love with the space, if I can just be in love with love, then the rightest thing will happen next.
Wow. Being in love. You were a few weeks ago for 3 weeks in South Africa and in love with another project.
Yes.
You were with the Train of Hope. And could you tell us something about that? What you did there and what inspires you to do that?
So what inspires me to do that? That's interesting. I stay inspired. So I was inspired to do it because I'm always inspired. They asked me to do it. I heard about this train and they told me they have these students and they require these students to do brief therapy, but they don't have any training. And I just thought, wow, that's got to be hard. I mean, I've got a lot of training and experience doing solution-focused therapy, and I find it hard, so that's got to be hard. And they said, if you're interested in going, we could arrange it. And I thought, holy cow, yeah, I'm interested in going. I want to make that happen. It's just an incredible experience. Like, I don't even know how to talk about it, honestly. Ask me questions. I'll tell you all about it, I guess.
So what did you do in South Africa? Let's start there.
I worked with another colleague, a woman named Alicia. So what this train does, for listeners who aren't aware, in South Africa, a lot of South Africa is still a very developing nation. So it's not easy for people who live outside of metropolis areas like Johannesburg or Durban or Cape Town. It's not easy for them to get access to basic needs, medical needs, pharmacy needs, eye care, so on and so on. So what this train does is it goes around South Africa and it stops at train stations. It stops for 2 weeks at each location. And I went and I stayed for 4 days in two different locations, a place called Piernarge River and another place called Zeerust. And these were like really remote, very, you know, developing nation type of places in South Africa. And one of the things that is on this train is psychological services. So what I did was I was working with the students and supervisors there to consult with them and train them to do solution-focused therapy with their clients.
And how come the name Train of Hope? Does that has to do something with solution
focus? I don't know. I just loved it though, man. Like, I don't know who picked it or why, but it is the most appropriate name for any project I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So when you were there and trained these people, what differences could you see and observe after your trainings? What did people do different?
What they did differently was solution-focused therapy. So I'll talk specifically about the most transformation that I saw. On the second week, the group of students were trained to do a psychoanalysis. So solution-focused brief therapy was incredibly strange to them. And they would voice that. They would say, like, this is unusual. But by the end of the fourth day, they were, like, completely bought in. I mean, they were totally like, we get it. Mm-hmm. We see it. And, like, we don't want to go back. Like, we totally get how this can be impactful in a person's life. And to watch them go from, I mean, almost shocked that I would have the audacity to ask a client what they want, because they would never ask that or even think that. Mm-hmm. And 4 days later, they were completely like, we get it. After watching you guys and listening to you and doing the exercises you said and all the, like, we get it. It was amazing.
So who were the people you teached? Were these the doctors or helpers?
Yeah, they were psychologists and psychologist students. Is part of what they do at their university is they go on the Train of Hope and they see clients as students. So my job was to make sure that they could do so using solution-focused brief therapy. I mean, it was absolutely incredible to watch people go from I've never heard of that before, and think it's crazy to I need more of this, and I get it. If someone were to ask me what I'm currently trying to do, I want to make the world fall in love with hope. I want to make the world fall in love with love. And watch these students become intrigued by hope when 4 days prior they were intrigued by problem analysis was one of the best experiences of my life.
And you travel the whole world spreading solution focus, teaching people. So what is it that you do in your trainings that is specifically Elliot and that helps them transform in a fast way, like you said?
I don't know, Don. That's a good question. What I'd like to say the answer is, you probably have to ask people who attend my workshops or attend my lectures, is I think solution-focused brief therapy is wonderful. And I think the questions are amazing. And I think all of that is true. And I think we'd all agree on that. But I think there's also like a magic ingredient that is not often written about, talked about, or researched. Because if I just sit here and I train a robot to ask best hopes questions or exception questions or miracle questions, I don't believe it would be as effective, because there's something that happens when one caring person asks another caring person these questions. And I think what I try to do very hard is I try to train that the questions have to exist in this dynamic or in this environment of care. And I think I talk overtly about that. I try to teach that. Like, yeah, anybody can learn these questions. I mean, it's not hard to do. But what you have to learn how to do is how do you ask these questions in an optimistic, presuppositional, caring way when someone is in their worst space? So when someone walks into your office and they're saying, I keep drinking and I can't stop drinking and I break all these rules and I've been depressed my whole life and I'm really anxious, it's my time to care instead of worry. Because when you worry, you ask certain questions. Or in fact, I would even say when you worry, you give advice. And advice is not nearly as transformative as care is. So I think we have to ignite our ability to care. And in my workshops and teaching and lectures and writing, I try to ignite people's ability to care.
And care for?
Care for humanity. I mean, care for people at large, to truly, genuinely do this work with your soul and with your heart. I don't think we learn how to do that in school. And I think we should talk about it more. So I try. I try very hard to do that.
So what can we all do to fall in love with love, fall in love with hope, fall in love with caring for humanity?
I think people can learn a lesson from Dominic and Elfie, actually. So what can we all do? I think walk around this world looking for it. Like, for example, you guys are driving an RV all around North America, but you're not looking for problems. So every time I see Dominic and Elfie, I see these bright, smiling faces. If you were driving around North America looking for problems, I don't know that you'd have the same bright, smiling faces. So I think we have to just walk through life and look for beauty, because then you see beauty. I mean, the people who live in a beautiful world, they live in the same world as the people who don't live in a beautiful world. But the people who live in a beautiful world are the ones who take the time to walk around and notice beauty.
It reminds me of experience we had in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where we were at a campground and a man next to us lived in his car. And we had the most amazing conversation. And it was such a hopeful man and such hopeful conversation we had. And it really touched me deeply, because my first impression was, oh, well, he has to live in a car and well, kind of homeless in this sense. And I didn't want to approach him like that. So I approached him in a different way. And it was beautiful how he responded. And we were in a conversation about life and about hope and about technical details of living in an RV and a car and all those beautiful things. And it really touched me deeply.
Yeah, right. And I mean, like, that's a brilliant thing, because you could have seen that person as, you know, a bane on society and homeless and incompetent and incapable and all of those things, but you allowed yourself to experience it as a beautiful moment. I think we have to walk around and put on our beauty glasses and just notice the beauty around us. And I think we have to work to see it. Like, it's really easy to see stress and problems. The world will show you stress and problems. I think you have to be a detective to find beauty.
In February, Elliot, you have a conference in Taos. Could you tell a little bit about this conference? Because we heard beautiful stories about the last conference and not only about, you know, the people presenting there, but really about the space. And you talked about being in love with the space, being in love with the people. So at your conference, and we saw that you really choose this place in Taos very deliberate. So
I actually flew there and I wanted to experience it myself before I agreed to do a conference there. Yeah, very true.
So what do you do at your conference that shows people that you're in love with this place?
I think when you're in love, it exudes it. My goal for hosting a conference is I didn't want to do an academic conference because, again, I think everybody's smart enough to learn this stuff. And I don't think there's any, you know, secret to learning it necessarily. But we go to these conferences and we see like these poster presentations and people standing behind a podium and all that stuff. I want a conference that will inspire just as much as it educates. And I want a conference that will build community and connection in a real genuine way. I cannot stand the word networking because networking implies I'm using you. Like if I go to a conference and my goal is like to network, I'm looking for people that can help me. But if I go to an event and I'm looking to actually form connection, then I'm looking for people that can help we. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create a conference that had we-ness attached to it. Mm-hmm. And family and bonding and those things. And the conference was extraordinary. So I did things that you normally don't see happen. Like throughout the whole conference, I bought them breakfast and lunch. And the environment has to be appropriate. So, you know, there was like a spa in the hotel. It was just a beautiful thing. And Taos is going to feel similar to that.
So we're looking very much forward to being there and to seeing that. And what we also see you doing is reaching people that other people would not be able to reach. Like we on our travel, for example, we meet people on the road that would never encounter Solution Focus. And you're doing similar things to reach people out in the world that are not in kind of a Solution Focus network. And we're so grateful for you doing that, because to fall in love with love and fall in love with hope and fall in love with Solution Focus, we need to go out there in the real world and also reach all of them out there. And you're doing a great job with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's important. And I've had conversations with people in the field. I'm not sure they agree with me. But years ago, I realized if this approach is going to grow and spread, we have to reach people that aren't easy to reach.
Yeah.
We have to reach people and bring them the message of hope. We have to go find them. And it became important to me to go find them. It became important to me to connect with them. And it became important to me to share what I experience in this solution-focused world with them. I probably spend more time lecturing to non-solution-focused audiences than anybody else in the field. And I love it. I love watching people like start off in the morning frustrated, sometimes even offended at the stuff that I say. And then by lunchtime, they're totally immersed in it. Like, I love that.
Yeah, I think this is also the thing we are able to experience with our journey, because we meet so many people who would never come in contact with Solution Focus without seeing our RV and starting Googling for it and going on our website and then listening to the podcast and all these things. And I think it's such a powerful approach and the world needs to know more about it. As Dominic said, we are in love with what you do, making people aware of this approach, and I think even one step further and bringing people in contact with this approach so that they can experience more joy, more ease, more hope, more love in their lives. So, Elliot, when we look back at our conversation and maybe on your experience, if there's one thing you would love to give our listeners today, one nugget of wisdom, one nugget of your experience to bring more hope, more love into their lives, what is that right now, today?
Can I give two?
Of course.
The first one would be to think of the most beautiful utopic world you'd like to live in. Like if you could design the world in the most utopic, wonderful, beautiful ways, think of what that would look like and go look for it, because you likely already live in a world that has most of what you would want in a utopia anyway. It's just sometimes we don't look hard enough. So I would say spend more of your time looking for your utopia, because you're probably probably there. You just didn't know you should be looking for it. So the second thing I would say is do something to or for someone else to make their utopia easier for them to see too.
Wow. Is this the challenge of the week?
That would be the challenge of the week. I would say with intention, look for your utopia in your own world because it's already there and you didn't know to look. And do something every day for or to someone so that they notice their utopia too.
Thank you very much for this beautiful challenge. I can't wait to discuss that with you, Dominic, and yeah, experience even more of our utopia. I think we are kind of doing it in a good way, and still there's always potential.
And it reminds me of the start.
I think
of
you're doing it in a great way.
Wow, thank you. It reminds me of the start of the podcast with getting to know each other and our emotions in a sense, getting connected with our experience of the future. So we're really looking forward to that.
Thank you very much, Elliot. And thank you very much, everyone listening to this podcast. We are
very
curious now how the challenge works for you. And we would love to have you share your experience with the challenge and maybe even some of your utopia with us. So please come and share in the comment field of our podcast on www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 24. What inspires you might inspire someone else to keep going their solution-focused journey. So we really want to encourage you to share your stories. Also, Elliot agreed to be on our website to answer your questions, to reply to your comments, and to connect with you. And there are many other opportunities to connect with Elliot. So we are very happy to put Elliot's website. He also has the Solution Focused University, his books. We didn't talk about all the other books you're right now on to publish or published. So we will put everything in the resource section of our podcast.
Thank you.
And obviously, please go to the Taos conference if you have a chance to do so.
Absolutely. My goal was to combine like the education of a professional conference with the energy level of a Tony Robbins conference with the heart of like a yoga conference. I want to bring it all together.
So we're all looking forward to that. Then thank you very much for being on our podcast, for sharing your inspiring stories, really heart touching, especially for me, the being in love with love and love with hope really touched me.
Yes. So awesome. Thank you guys for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Elliot. Bye. And hope to see you soon.
Yeah. Goodbye.
I hope so. Bye guys.
Bye. That was BB.